Well, hey guys, welcome to the Bohunting Soul Podcast. Thanks for joining me again. All right, it's been a minute. It's been a while. I apologize. It's harder and harder to get people. We're in the swing of hunting season, and between my schedule and everyone else's schedule, it's very, very tough. So I hope you guys will kind of bear with me. It'll get better, obviously, after hunting season. It'll settle down a little bit, but it's a good thing. It means people are out hunting. It means I'm out hunting, and that's a good thing. So no new updates really. Had a really cool encounter. Let's see. I had a really cool encounter the other day. I went to a spot kind of from last year where I know deer will kind of filter out, and it's in an area where it's really marshy, and the soil isn't all that great. I think I might have talked about this before. And the trees there, they may be big trees, but I'm really hesitant to climb them because lots of those big old trees like come down all the time. The soil isn't great. The trees themselves aren't all that great. Even when you climb up and there's no wind or whatever, you move around a little bit, the whole tree like kind of sways. I just don't think they're strong trees. They're just the soil isn't there to support it. And anyway, I didn't really feel like being in a stand. I took my stand with me, and I was gonna set up there, and I'm like, man, I just don't feel safe. But what I did do was I basically climbed up like less than one stick. I mean, my stand was just enough to get above some marsh grass, some tall grass kind of stuff, and basically it was like head high. I mean, my platform was head high. I climbed up there and I sat there, and I thought I had my stand angled off in a direction that they would not see me inside profile when they were coming. I was wrong. I looked over, there was a yearling doe standing there about 20, 25 yards away, not even that far. And as she saw me, we locked eyes, and after that she just blew. But the wind was coming from her to me, but then she blew. She kind of stuck around for like a minute, and she turned around, turned tail, stuck her tail in the air, and then ran off. And she blew until the next county. I mean, I heard her blowing for the next like minute, as she was bounding away. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it was just like a super skittish, yearling or something like that. But nothing else came by. I'm gonna try that spot again. I know deer filter through there. It's just that's the one I kind of last year spent, one tree over, one tree over, one tree over, just kind of trying to fine tune and hone exactly where I'm gonna be. And I don't know. I think I'm gonna get. Hopefully, I'm gonna get it done there. That's gonna be. It's gonna pay off because that area is kind of. Not eluding me, but I'm having some great encounters there. I just got to find the right tree. The trees are hard to climb. I don't want to get too high in them, and it's pretty tricky. But if it pays off, it'll pay off. So anyway, so that's one I've missed. I think I recounted the story. Maybe I didn't. I think I recount the story in this episode. I shot a squirrel. I'm sorry, I shot a raccoon, and so far I have missed six squirrels. Six squirrels I've missed, which is just disheartening because they're so much fun to shoot, and I like shooting them. And yeah, so 0 for 6 over here. So we got to turn that number around. So anyway, nothing else new to report here. So today's guest is Tony Messina. Tony just actually started his new YouTube channel. It's oh God, I'm gonna mess it up. It's Mountain State Trad Hunter, I believe. I'll leave a link. I'll leave a link below to it, and in the show notes and stuff. So Tony, switched over to full-time traditional just a few years ago, and he's had some very good success. He's got into filming this year, and happy for it because he's doing really good. He's doing like a daily kind of not daily, but like hunt vlogs, like a vlog series. He's got a few of his hunts on there. One of them we talk about in depth. You guys got to go check that out. It's a really cool story about how he shot this buck and where he found it and how he found it. It's pretty cool. You guys got to listen to it and then go watch his channel. So, what else? Putting out a couple videos here and there myself. I did one on that platform, the Scout platform, that just recently went live. I'm sure I'll get a ton of hate mail from the saddle crowd that are like pure saddle, and we always get that on YouTube, but whatever. It had nothing to do with the Scout platform. It's just trying to shoot out of a saddle for me, with that kind of platform. If that's a bigger platform, a giant platform, maybe, I can move around the tree a little bit better, push off with my legs a little bit better. But I tried it again. It just wasn't for me. So that platform is sold. But if you guys are one sticking and you're happy with the saddle hunting and you're able to make it work, that's a really cool option. Just bolts to the top of your stick, and you hunt off of it, and it's just a little better than standing on your top steps or your normal climbing stick. So I'm kind of waffling still between the one stick method here, and I got another beast stick. with a with an aider. I got like a one of those five step like webbing aider kind of things. The aiders, they kick out. I don't mind using it on the very bottom stick, trying to put it up kind of as high as it can go. I will not use anything like that on anything higher. I've tried it before. It's just too sketchy. You kick out. It's weird. So any stick that's subsequently higher than that gets a cable aider, right? One cable aider, and then going up and down. So the thing with that is when you're climbing one stick, it's great. But when you get into a tree, like the trees that I was just talking about here in that one marshy area, you've got some trees on there that just look like they've got like 30 little tiny fingers growing out of it that kind of point upward. And trying to move your one stick up past all that stuff, reattach everything is going to be a nightmare. So on something like that, it's probably easier to just do two sticks. Put the first stick as high as you can, and then the second. So basically, you're just attaching two things plus your what do you call that thing? The thing you stand on. Oh yeah, the tree stand. Otherwise, one stick. So anyway, this area that I'm going into isn't very far away. So I think if I go tonight, and I might go tonight, then I am going to take both of those sticks with me. I know exactly where I'm going. I'm not walking in far. I know that the tree or two that I want to be in, and I definitely don't want to. Be one stick climbing. Anyway, I kind of diverged, went down a rabbit hole there. So that yearling doe, she blew. She caught me. It was kind of not early on, but I mean, I still have about an hour or so left till the end of the day. And I'm like, well, I just hopped down, literally hopped down. I mean, it's one stick down. Took my stuff down and then set up on the ground away from that tree, just in case she came back or something else came back. She wouldn't be looking. If she looked directly at that tree, I wouldn't be there. I kind of moved a little bit closer into the brush on the ground. Nothing came in. But that's going to be an area where I would like to be elevated. So anyway, that's kind of what I'm going to do. Other than that, still shooting every now and then. Doing a lot of stump shooting, walking in and out of places. That's a ton of fun. Obviously, I've missed a few squirrels. Like I said, that's kind of frustrating, but it's still kind of fun. And that's about it. There's really nothing else to talk about. So I really appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you guys' patience with not being able to put out these podcasts and YouTube videos and stuff all that frequently. Obviously, go check out the Push Archery Center of Knowledge, right? The courses there are just awesome. They're really, really good. Whether you're an old school, totally trad guy, or like you're new school, geeked out, like tuning guy, there's something for everybody in one of those courses. So highly, highly recommend that. Also highly, highly recommend go check out Hiko Ito Knives. Guy makes some awesome stuff. He makes some awesome knives. He's got his website is hikoito.com. I'm using that EDC Skinner Lite, which is a super handy little knife. It's really good. I really like it. I would like to actually clean some more animals with it, but that would be fantastic. But we'll see. We'll go check out his stuff. High quality stuff. High quality craftsmanship. Like super, super good. Super good. So go check that out. And I think that's gonna be it. I'm going to stop rambling here. So, thanks for listening. Like, share, and subscribe, please. That's super important. And here's my interview with Tony Messina.
Recording on your end here pretty second.
I got it.
There we go. Cool. Awesome. We have Tony Messina on the line. Finally, it's been how long have we tried to get together here? Like a month? 3 weeks? A month?
I think it's been about a month.
It's crazy, dude. It's hunting season, which is awesome, but for anyone that does like any kind of podcast, it's like, oh God, how am I going to fill the time? Because it's impossible to get people, and when you can get people, it's like the one night that that you yourself can maybe go out or one day or whatever, and it's like, yeah, I love the podcast thing, but man, I want to be hunting, so it gets it's in the doldrums of like content, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But we got you on. I'm so excited because well, hell, where the hell do we start? I mean, I follow you on Instagram. You've got a new channel. I've heard you on a couple of the podcasts and stuff. So I guess for those that don't know, who haven't heard you or whatever, give like a quick little bio about yourself.
All right. Yeah. So my name's Tony Messina. I'm from the Northern Virginia area. I now live in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. So, really enjoy hunting the mountains and stuff like that. I got into traditional archery in 2020, and I ended my 2020 season on like a really good note. I ended up shooting a good buck with my compound, and then I shot another doe with my compound as well. But, you know, I'm 32 years old now. I've been bow hunting since I was 15. So I was like, I think I need something a little different. So I sold everything basically compound related and forced myself to learn traditional archery. And it's been the best thing I've ever done. So
what was the reason for that? I mean,
I guess I'm fortunate enough to hunt in the Northern Virginia area where we have very high deer populations. And I took a lot of deer with like compound equipment and stuff. And, it was just, you know, wanting to basically get a little challenge, you know? So
did you have, like friends or whatever that hunted with a stick bow, or it was just kind of something that just kind of popped into your head? Like, hey, I know this other kind of weapon exists out there, and I'm just kind of interested in it.
Yeah, it was kind of that. I do have one friend, his name's Joshua Phillips, and, he hunts with traditional stuff, and, he kind of got my gears turning. A couple other guys I've met on Instagram, like Schaefer Magnet, you know, all those guys. And
never heard of them. I'm just kidding.
So yeah, like those were some of the first people I came into contact with just via, you know, social media platforms and just poking and prodding, you know, trying to get information, and then just ended up diving in.
So what does that journey look like all of a sudden? I mean, did you just kind of just be like, did you pick something up first and then make a transition, or did you sell everything first and then dive in? Like, what did that look like?
So we wrapped up our Virginia season right around, I think it's the first Saturday in January. So wrapped up that season, and I think by February I had my compound sold. I sold everything. And
no
then,
shit.
It was like a month after the season, and I had made a choice basically in December. I was like, I'm going to end this season with a compound, and then I'm going to start my journey doing the traditional thing, whether I like it or not. So
had you even shot a stick bow or anything like that before?
So yeah, back in 2000, I want to say it was 15, I worked with a guy, he was a little older than I was. And, at the time, and he had a recurve bow, and, asked me if I was interested in it one day. And he said, you can basically take it and use it for, you know, 5-6 months. And if you like it, you can buy it from me. And if not, you can just give it back. And, it was an Allegheny Mountain recurve bow is what it was called. And I guess the bowyer at that point had passed away. So I don't know much about that bowyer or, you know, stuff that he had turned out or where he's even from. But
yeah, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it was, it was Allegheny Mountain recurve is what it was. And it was like 56 pounds at 29 inches or something like that. It was something pretty heavy, you know, and I'm a pretty small framed guy. So
yeah, perfect to learn on.
So I took that thing, and he had three arrows and a quiver on it. And I just started shooting with a tab and was shooting split finger, because that's the way that I saw it in the magazine or whatever. And I got nowhere with it. You know, I didn't know anything, and I ended up giving it back to him. So 5 years went by, and that's when I, you know, actually decided to make the switch. So
had you started consuming any traditional like content like YouTube or any of that stuff prior to making that kind of hard cut?
Yeah. So I kind of, that's actually where I started doing my research, was like social media platforms and then also on YouTube. And the first thing I came across was The Push Archery. And I watched that initial video that I guess they made that was super long and went through every detail about it. And that was a huge help.
Yeah.
So, and that really got me focusing on like form and stuff rather than just slinging arrows, you know, wanting to be accurate. It was like form first, get it figured out, then move on to the accuracy, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, it takes away a lot of the, like implied mystique about shooting one of these things, you know, because there's so many different ways to do it. So, I mean, I think that's like the, that was a highlight for me when I first saw that. Obviously, I mean, everyone's watched that film, but it's kind of the same way. I mean, they kind of go through, there's more than one way, you know? And I think recently, again, he was saying like, for some reason, you know, we got kind of labeled, they got kind of labeled as, oh, the whole video is about fixed crawl.
Yeah, exactly.
when it's not, you know, but yeah, it's, it's certainly helped out a lot and spawned a lot of other content as well. So that's that's pretty awesome. So then what'd you get? You sold your compound, and then
so I sold my compound, and just going off of surfing the different Facebook groups like traditional bow hunters, I ended up getting a Black Hunter longbow, and I got a 45-pound limbs on it. And it was 45 pounds at 28 inches. And I thought the whole time, just transitioning from a compound, I was like, I have a 27-inch draw. So that's what I went for. Like the whole first year I shot, shooting that longbow, I was like, I have a 27-inch draw. So that's what I was going off of. I later found out I have a 25-inch draw with the traditional bow.
Oh, yeah.
I lost 2 inches, and I got that bow, and I ordered a cheap dozen of carbon arrows off of like Amazon or something like that. I wasn't too worried about tuning or anything. I was just like, let's just get this form thing down and figure out my style of how I'm going to go about this. And so I got that thing in February is when it came in, and I started shooting. I mean, if my wife was on here, she would tell you it was every day through winter, like snow, everything. I'd be outside shooting that thing.
Yeah.
And it didn't take me long till I started hitting where I was, starting to look. And I ended up adopting gap shooting off of that push, that push video. Mm-hmm. And so at first I was just like, look where I want to hit and then shoot, doing the whole instinctive thing. And I just got nowhere with it. And it was giving me bad flashbacks to like that little time in 2015, because it was just pure instinctive I was trying to shoot, and I can't do it. So
yeah,
once I picked up that gap shooting, it did not take long before I started getting better at it. So
it wasn't that difficult for you then to kind of develop for you, how different was the form compared to your compound, right? I mean, Cause some people jump in and they're like, okay, like dead straight vertical. Right. And others, they kind of go toward the cant, and others they kind of,
Yeah. So when I shot a compound,
not even aiming and stuff, but.
Yeah, for sure. So like with the whole form aspect of it, with a compound, it was the same thing, straight up vertical. I shot a thumb release. So I would draw back, turn my wrist inwards, and then, anchor on my, basically on my knuckles to my jawbone. And with that Black Hunter longbow, it was natural for me to cant it a little bit. And I don't know why. I just slightly would cant it, and it would bring that arrow up in line with my eye a little better. And and basically when I got into it in 2020, I also had done more research, compared to 2015. And rather than doing split finger, I tried 3-under, and then it really all started coming together. So yeah, it was definitely different, but I naturally would cant the bow for sure.
I think for some reason, I don't know why, like when I shot a compound, like I would never cant it, obviously, because it's just, I don't know, everything's in alignment. Everything is, it's supposed to be, right? But like you pick up a stick bow, and then, I mean, if you were to like just put your hand out like right now, make a fist right in front of you. Your hand naturally makes mine goes naturally to at least 1 o'clock, right? It makes kind of, if you were to hold a broomstick in your hand, it's just naturally the way your hand even just wants to go. So I never really found like that part to be too much of a problem, like switching over. And then obviously the more you can't, the more it opens up. But it depends on the bow too. Like some bows, have like a huge like window, and others are like super tiny V in there, So it all... Yep. Depending on what you're shooting. So, so you're flinging arrows by February, right? Uh-huh. And then are you feeling confident by the next, so that would have been what, the fall of 21? Is that right then?
Yeah. That would have been rolling into 21. So I was shooting in February, and I actually took that longbow turkey hunting that spring. So I was confident enough by spring that I was like, I can get in a blind, maybe call a turkey up to, 5-10 yards, and I can definitely take it. And so that's what I tried doing by springtime. So
how'd that work out?
I never got one. Of course. I have a, I don't know, when I was in my younger teens, I had quite a few really good springs, you know, running and gunning with a shotgun, but
yeah,
the past 5 years has not been nice to me for sure with the whole turkey aspect.
when I learned, so I'm like oh for five or whatever I've missed a few. I missed one with my compound like a bunch of years back, even at 11 yards, because I was getting kind of greedy trying to shoot for the neck.
Yep.
And I just grazed it. But I mean, ever since then, just when you learn to actually like get close, you know, I missed one with my recurve, you know, in a ghillie on the ground, you know, just behind some deadfall. I mean, but those are the ones that kind of stick out at, like in your head, like, wow, that was an awesome hunt. But I know like the last several years, like it would have been absolute murder had I had a shotgun in my hand,
yep.
You know? And it's like, and it sounds like really cocky to say, oh, this would have been easy because I still haven't shot one yet. But I know for a fact there'd be a pile of feathers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the last several years, you know, and it's the only thing I like about spring. I'm not a spring and summer guy. I don't like heat. And so I just, but I like being able to get out, you know, in the cool mornings of spring. And then after that, you know, my day is shot. Basically it's hot, humid and mucky, but yeah, it's a blast, man. And we actually have, a fall turkey season here too. It's the month of October. So okay. I've got a tag. I don't know if you guys have a fall turkey season over there.
Yeah. Yep. We do. We definitely have them in Virginia and, you know, both Virginia and West Virginia. I don't know the exact dates off the top of my head. Virginia fall turkey kind of like ebbs and flows through the season. It like comes in, goes out. So you'll have you'll have like some, you know, some time during bow season to shoot one if you have the opportunity. I think you even have some time during black powder to shoot one if you have the opportunity. And then also during firearm season as well. So, yeah, it kind of just comes and goes. I think they allow it Thanksgiving Day as well for like firearms. It's kind of cool. So.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. No, we just get the entire month of October here. You know, we get like 5 weeks in, six weeks in the spring, and just, you know, the month of October. And it's either sex tag here in October. So, funny thing is, last couple of years, I've like damn near like walked up on a few of them. I mean, like it was the last year or 2 years ago. And of course I didn't have a tag on me. It was like either late September or I hadn't bought a turkey tag or something. And, you know, I was like midday, like, I don't know, scouting or squirrel hunting or something like that. And, you know, I just walked up on this group of hens. They knew I was there. I literally walked up to them. Like, and I mean, maybe not one arrow length away, but like two arrow lengths away. I mean, like, it's right there. I could like jumped on the damn things. But of course, when you have a tag in your pocket. So yesterday I went to this one spot and we kind of had a back and forth kind of rap battle with a bunch of hens that just wouldn't come up the side of the cliff, you know, where I was up on kind of this plateau. So, but and it's one of those target of opportunity things. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have a tag in my pocket just in case.
Oh yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, we get two tags in West Virginia, and then Virginia allows three tags. And I believe, I don't know how they do the either sex tag, but I do know there's like spring only. I think there's like one or two spring only tags, and then you have like an either sex fall tag as well.
Oh yeah. No, our spring is only for, gobblers, you know, but, fall is either sex. So, it's a ton of fun. So when you were growing up, like you said, you've been hunting for a long time, right? Even like pre stick bow and all that stuff, right? Like, did you just jump right into deer? Or did you do any small game, or like, what was your kind of hunting, growth, you know, journey?
Yeah. So, I'm definitely fortunate to come from a family of hunters. A lot of my family's from like up around the Pittsburgh area, up in Pennsylvania. And, lots of like, you know, mountain hunter type guys with the rifles, you know, the old school PA way and stuff.
Sure.
And so anyways,
Remington, what, 760s or 7600s, you know, pump.
Yep.
Those things are cool.
Oh, absolutely. And so my mom's father, my grandfather, you know, they all ended up down here in the Northern Virginia area because of work. And he started taking me down to Central Virginia where, we have a hunt club down there, and we lease a couple thousand acres from a timber company. Yep. And he started taking me down there when I was probably 5 years old. And we would do squirrel hunting at first. And then, you know, he got me a 22 when I was five for Christmas. And then when I was eight, he got me a single shot 410. And then started doing some deer hunting, and we actually used hounds for deer down there. That's how I grew up doing it.
No and, kidding.
Yeah, and they still do it. I don't really participate anymore, but I did take my stepson last year just because it's a lot of fun. You know, he gets to see the deer running and stuff. And but anyway, so yeah, I ended up taking my first deer down there ever when I was 10 with that 410, and that just hooked me big time. So after that, I got pretty much strictly wanting to deer hunt, and I guess going through that evolution, when I was about 12, I got my first black powder rifle, and then that's when my grandfather and my dad let me loose on my own to start hunting by myself.
Nice.
And that's when I started just self-teaching my stuff, everything, just being by myself out there. It was so much fun. So yeah, that's kind of my evolution growing up from a kid doing it.
So, I mean, you were guided, but it sounds like you were kind of a lot of it was kind of like self-taught, right? You just kind of left to the mountains, go figure it out.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I wish more people did that.
Yeah. Yep. And like the deer density down there is not really high. So, you know, I was raised somehow. I didn't, you know, get out of it or anything like some kids would, but you know, you go many days, you could not see a deer at all, you know? So
yeah.
It wasn't like any, you know, high deer density areas down there in Central Virginia, but it's when I started hunting Northern Virginia, and as a little bit older adult, when I started getting into the high deer density areas. So
yeah, so jumping back to your stick bow year now. So you went out a little bit for turkey, you know. Uh-huh. Basically did a lot of bow hiking, which is kind of what I do.
Yeah.
And then you end up, so deer season comes around, right? Let's mm-hmm. kind of walk through that. What, did you have success?
Yep. So, I basically kicked off, I guess it would be fall of 2021, deer season. West Virginia opens in September, I think late September. So I have a pretty big piece of public here by my house. And I started hunting it. And just getting out, you know, I was seeing deer. I just was really trying to learn how to rearrange my setups, you know, with like a compound bow. I was setting up like, you know, 30 yards. I could get a shot. But I was doing the same thing at first with that stick bow. But I was like, I need to be closer. Mm-hmm. So I spent that whole first year learning how to get close. And I think it was like the first week in November, I was hunting a private parcel that I have permission on in Northern Virginia. And, it was like a beautiful, crisp November morning, you know, something you can't ask for anything better. And right at first, I was hunting the edge of a cedar thicket and, just trying to catch bucks cruising. Cause that's normally when our rut starts kicking off, is right there, like first, second week in November.
Mm-hmm.
And right at first light, these three does come crashing out of the cedar thicket with a monster 10 point behind him, and that 10 point stopped probably 10 or 11 yards from my tree. I think it was 11 yards when I ranged it. And I shot right under him, like my feather slapped his armpit.
Oh no.
And that was the first deer I loosed an arrow at with that longbow, and that just, but what was crazy about it is I wasn't even mad. I was just like, wow, so this is how it's going to be, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Because with my compound, I would have crushed that deer, you know?
Yeah.
So, but.
And I find too, sorry to interrupt, but like, I find too, like, it's not even like, yeah, the closeness, but it's also like the cover you have, right?
Uh-huh.
For not only like, okay, we're shooting bigger bows, right? You got all these, you got limb clearance to worry about, where, I mean, nowadays, like a quote unquote big, you know, compound is like 28 inches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause a lot of people complain like, oh wow, you know, will it fit in a tree stand? Will it fit in this? It's like, dude,
yeah,
you don't even exactly know. And the shots you can take out of like some sniper hide, you know, like a tiny little hole you can shoot like flat through, where you may not be able to get that flat through with your longbow kind of thing. You know, just
yep.
you can sit back an extra 10, 15 yards, no big deal, totally hidden. Here it's, you know, man, you got to be like right on them.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, it was just like a big learning experience. I was actually still hunting out of a saddle too, which I
Yeah.
Not long after that experience, I went right back to a tree stand, and that's what I've been doing ever since. But
yeah, ditto.
So, but yeah, that was like my first arrow let loose at a deer, and whiffed it at 10 yards on a beautiful deer. Like, I would have mounted that deer in a heartbeat. He was big. And so I went through started progressing through November, didn't have any luck. I basically hunted all the way to the end of December, still seeing deer, but no luck. I think I missed another deer, a doe. I think I missed in late November, I think, or early December. Can't really remember, but we have a late urban season in West Virginia, and a friend of mine, this is in January now, so January of 2022 now. So a friend of mine had like 20 acres about 15 minutes from the house here. I live in Martinsburg, West Virginia is the town I live by. And he had 20 acres like in town, and he was like, there's tons of deer in there. It's like an urban area, type thing. And he asked me to go hunting with him one morning. And so I did, and I ended up getting my first traditional kill that morning in that little urban spot. And we can kind of dive into that if you want.
Absolutely, yeah. I want to hear it.
Yeah. So it was like a little 20-acre piece owned by a church, I believe, and they let him hunt it. The way it kind of set up was like woods, and then there was actually like a little kind of overpass where the deer would come through on the one side. On the other side of the property, it was like a large power line with a big like wooded knoll-type hill across it. And we had a little dusting of snow. I think this was January 14th-ish time. So we had a good dusting of snow, and my buddy said, just go down to that power line, and we were getting there right about daybreak, and he was like, go down to that power line, there should be some trails crossing it, and just set up on a trail, and they bed up on that knoll a lot. So I said, okay, cool. So I'm like kind of sneaking my way down to that power line. It's just breaking daylight. I'm just looking for deer moving around still, and I get to the power line, and I look, and I see no trails except one trail crossing it, and it was like beat down to the mud through the snow. And I was like, okay, that's my ticket.
Super fresh. So, yeah,
it was fresh, like mud splatters in the snow type thing, like they had been using it the night prior. And so the wind was wrong. It was actually blowing at my back towards the trail, so I hooked up in the woods about 30 yards and hopped over the trail and came back, or I basically J-hooked into it, so I had the wind in my face. And I got like 8 foot high in this little gnarly tree. I had a Novix Hilo at the time. And I got up in this little gnarly tree. I was like 8 foot high. It wasn't, it was a good hide, but I wasn't very high. And that trail set up for about a 15 yard shot. And I get everything set up, get my bow up. And my buddy texts me, said, are you set up? And I text him. I said, yep, I'm all good. And I sit on my seat. And I look over to the left up on that knoll, and I see three does coming down already. Like, I hadn't been set there for 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, wow, there's deer coming already, And I didn't know what they were doing. They weren't really working my way quite yet. So I'm watching them. They ended up working my way, came down right on that trail I'm set up for, and they stopped. There was three of them. The lead ones kind of, looking around, just making sure everything's good. And then she commits and starts coming across the power line. And I'm like, at this time, I'm like ready. And they got across, and I drew back on that lead doe and let my arrow go. And I hit her perfect. I saw her mule kick and everything. And like, I about came out of that stand with excitement. Like, it is a whole other feeling doing it with I was shooting a zipper recurve at that point. I didn't have my black hunter at that time.
Yeah.
So I had gotten a zipper recurve secondhand from a friend. So ended up getting her, and it was like I'm not doing this any other way after that,
So how far was the shot?
She was right on the trail at 15 yards.
Okay.
So, yep.
So did it go down in sight or
I would have been able to see her. She went about 60 yards and crashed.
Crashed.
But she ran up around this like big hedgerow type thing. And actually, my buddy was walking out after I told him I'd got one. We were going to meet up, and she ran up towards him, and he ended up finding her first. So it just was like perfect.
Nice.
Yep.
God, first one down. That's that's good. I mean, that's pretty quick success.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was. I did not expect it. I didn't expect to go that whole first year, and I was just struggling, you know. So
yeah, was that your only one for the year? Or?
Yeah, that was the only one I ended up getting that year, and I think I was a deer a year with a stick bow since then. So.
So that was 21, right? You said, or 22? I was into 22.
That would have been, yeah, it was just fresh into 22 because it was that late urban season we have in January. So it was the 20.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. 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 Okay. And then after that, it's just what you got, you're still turkey hunting. You're still doing, I do go out for small game at all. Do you do anything else? Like, I don't know what you guys are seasons are for, you know, like, do you get out in the woods, you know, in anger kind of thing, actually hunting past deer season or you know, before certain species come in, or
So our small game seasons are pretty concurrent with deer season. Yeah. And I'm usually just so caught up deer hunting, I get so obsessive over it, and like that's all I want to do, and I kind of forget if there's even a small game season. And it used to not be that way. I used to take my 22 out a lot in like October and stuff like that, you know, just to do squirrel hunting, and I would sacrifice a little deer time. But since I started hunting with a stick bow, I just forget that we even have a small game season. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so usually once a deer season goes out, I immediately kick into scouting for next deer season, you know, in that late winter when the woods are bare and all the signs there from the year prior, you know.
So are you hunting mostly private then, or are you like a mix? Because you said you had this friend that has this property, and you guys used to lease the property back home in PA or whatever. But
yeah, so I'm hunting. I would say now, especially this year, because I actually just picked up a 30-acre farm this year, and so I'm hunting kind of 50-50 now. But through my time hunting since 2020. It's been mostly public. I had like my lease in Central Virginia that I was talking about. I can go there anytime I want. I just don't make it down there often. I just don't have the time. Yeah. And so I have like that down there that I could always go hunt. And then I had like a 10-acre private spot about 45 minutes from here. And I hunted it often as well. That's actually where I missed that big 10 with my black owner. Mm-hmm. I'd say up until this year, I was mainly hunting public. Like I said, I got that big piece right here by my house, and I was also venturing out into the National Forest a lot too. So,
but that's pretty awesome. How's your hunting? How does your hunting, I guess, opportunities go? Right. I mean, how often do you get a chance to go?
So luckily my wife likes deer meat as much as I do. And, she's pretty good at making, like, she'll make time for me, and normally I'm hunting at least once or twice a week, you know, like basically full days once or twice a week. My work schedule's Sunday to Wednesday, and so I have every Thursday, Friday, Saturday off, so that's kind of nice.
what do you do, let me ask?
I'm a critical facilities engineer at a data center. So, okay. We do like basically cooling and cooling and power to the customers' racks and stuff like that, to the server. Yeah, to the server racks, and we're basically 24/7 uptime. So
gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I work Friday, Saturday, okay. Sunday, and I work 12s, and then going again on Wednesday from like 6 till, because I work 6 to 6, and then I work like 6 to like noon. It depends on a Wednesday. It's kind of my catch-up day. And then, but then, you know, like I took like a part-time job, which has kind of turned into my second full-time job. And my buddies, he owns like a butcher shop, deli, sandwich place, burger place, whatever, just right in town over here. So, but then all of a sudden, like hunting season snuck up, and I'm like, wait a minute, like, because when I started last year, this is the end of the season with him, right? So now it's like, oh crap, my Tuesdays and Thursdays were available, now they're not. And you know, Monday's my only like real day off, and then I still got to come back and like, you know, pick up my daughter from school midday, you know, mid afternoon and stuff. So it's been Yeah, I'm just trying to eke out as much time as I can, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And yeah, I got two daughters and a stepson as well. And my daughters are 2 and 3. We're actually doing my youngest daughter's birthday Saturday. And so they're 2 and 3, and then my stepson's 8. And so, like, just between, you know, trying to give my wife a break, she stays home with the kids. So, you know, just trying to give her a break as well. And we're pretty good about it, you know. So she gives me time, I give her time. So
yeah, it's all about the balance until, like, time runs out for everybody, you know. And then you're like,
exactly.
Oh, we're all so busy. And the thing is, it's like, so my daughter's 11, right? So
okay.
Everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, you'll have more time. And it's like, yeah, but when they get older, they get into more activities. Now you got after school activities, and you've got like running and band or this, that, and the other. And it's like, oh crap, this was time didn't free up.
Exactly. Yep.
So, but that's fine. I mean, I enjoy doing, you know, watching her do all that stuff too. But yeah, it's nice to be able to just kind of just even midday. Like yesterday, I went out for a few hours midday, and it was great. I got into a bunch of squirrels. I love small game, right? So I got into a bunch of squirrels. I had a buck, you know, walk up on me, stare at me about, you know, 25, 30 yards, just kind of caught me off guard. Had that, like I said, that epic rap battle back and forth, those hens, you know, those turkeys, uh-huh. So, you know, all in the course of like 3 hours. And I'm like, God, that was an action packed 3 hours. That was fun.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Any time out's good, you know, even if it's, like you said, just a little quick midday hunt. Sometimes that's when the good things happen, you know, so.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I've, you know, bumped, you know, deer or, you know, seen deer or whatever, like, you know, a midday as well kind of thing. So it's like, well, I guess it can happen kind of anytime. It's just, I wasn't quite set up for it, you know, so, mm-hmm. You know, I did end up shooting a raccoon the other day. It was last Monday. I was, going into this one spot and, It was like gray light. It was legal shooting, although I think you could shoot them at night, but it was legal shooting, but like barely. And I see this family of raccoons coming at, you know, coming kind of at me, and I see them at night anyway. I see their lights and stuff, or other lights, the light shining off their eyes, you know, when I'm walking in or whatever, in the pitch black or whatever. Mm-hmm. And but this one, he was like coming at me, like, all right, I'm gonna smoke one of these. So I turn around, I shot. It was like maybe like 7 or 8 yards, right? So skewered this thing. and it runs off. So like I was shooting obviously downwards because it was so close, so it went through, but it like stopped on the ground, and then of course it, you know, he ran off with it. And we're on this kind of bluff, right? This the area I was hunting was just like this kind of high oak bluff, and then there's like a really steep drop off. So this thing goes bolting over, and it takes a header off of this cliff. It was like this like 12 foot 15 foot, you know, it was over 12, less than 15, let's say, right? But it, and it's uh-huh. like steep, like rocky face, and it falls down onto this bench. So I go running after it, stop at the edge, peer over, and this bench is only about like 7-8 yards wide. So then it runs off even, you know, more, and falls down the other side of the bluff all the way down toward the marsh, which is like a good like 30-35 feet, right? Oh, and I'm like, holy shit. So then I lost sight of it there, and I couldn't go straight down. I had to do like this meandering way around so I didn't break my neck. I searched for an hour for that thing, you know, no blood, no nothing. I mean, it's dead, but I mean, it got in the marsh grass, and I could not find, I found a ton of beds, some good trails down there. I know where everything's bedding, you know, as far as like deer go, but, I wanted my arrow back, but I'm like, that crazy raccoon literally just flew off the side of a cliff.
That's crazy.
You know? Yeah. So I wanted to find it, cause I wanted my arrow back, and I wanted to, you know, like, you know, Instagram picture proof, you know, that, you actually shot this thing.
Yeah, yeah, I just skewered this raccoon. That's awesome.
Yep. Then I proceeded to miss like four squirrels, you know, three squirrels that day. And yeah, but still, I mean, it was a ton of fun. But I don't know. There's it's a long season. Ours goes till December 31. I'm guessing yours goes that far too, right? Do you go into January at all?
Yeah. So we have in West Virginia, we have so I think it goes late. It ends up ending with either late muzzleloader or bow, but it is December 31st. So then the one cool thing I love about this state is after general season goes out, 2 weeks go by, and then right about that mid-January, we have 4 days of what they call Mountaineer Heritage Season. And it's sidelock muzzleloaders only with no scopes, or longbows and recurves only.
Nice.
And and they allow us to kill a buck, a doe, a bear, or a turkey.
So, whoa, no kidding.
Yeah, so you could go out in January, you know, and basically have the woods to yourself because there's not many people using primitive weapons, you know what I mean? So,
sure.
I mean, at least not in my area that I know of. I've never ran into anybody out there. So I just have, you know, 4 days of, I guess the animals have had 2 weeks to kind of calm down after, you know, deer season goes out. So there's some good opportunity out there in those 4 days, but it's just really cool knowing that it's a level playing field. Like, I'm hiking those mountains with my longbow, and so is everybody else, pretty much. So
yeah.
It's really cool that they do that. Virginia's general season runs till the first Saturday in January. Other than like in the Northern Virginia area, because we have that really, really high deer density, we have like a late doe season that literally runs close to April. It'll almost run to April.
What?
It's insane. Yeah, people never believe it, but I'm like, look at the Virginia game law book and look up the late antlerless season in Northern Virginia. It's crazy.
Dang, that's that almost doesn't feel right.
It's not. It's really not. Yeah.
You know.
Yep. It's like right as soon as January ends, I'm pretty much wrapped up.
I think, it was a few years ago. I had Blaine Prowse on, right? He's a stump stalker. I don't know if you follow him on Instagram.
Maybe.
What's that?
I think so. I think I do follow him.
Yeah, so he's out in Canada. He's out like in some island out in BC or off of BC or something like that, right? And he was telling I can't remember. So if he listens, I'm sorry, but he was saying that like they got such a like a whitetail population there. I think he has tags for like 14 deer or something crazy, or and the season is just like stupid long, right? I mean. I'm forgetting the details or whatever, but I remember being like kind of when he was telling me about it, it was just kind of like, what, seriously? And he's like, oh yeah, it's just like super long and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, ours goes long enough, I think, you know,
absolutely.
You know, like as it's mid September to end of December, you know, and that's pretty much it. And then after that, I think everything, you know, all the animals need a rest. And I think so do the hunters for a while. So, So, I guess we could kind of, I want to segue into like some of the filming you've been doing, right?
Okay.
You recently started your channel. Was it Mountain State something?
Mountain State Trad Journal.
Mountain State Trad Journal. And is it just you, or are you going to have any other, like, do you hunt with other people that are going to be on that with you? Or is that just kind of your content?
It's just me, really. I don't have a camera guy or anything. I mean, I do have buddies I hunt with, but like if we ever end up in the same tree for some reason, then sure, you know, they might be on it. My stepson will probably be on the channel this spring, doing some turkey hunting with me. I've been taking him, getting him into hunting, got him a longbow built too. So he's loving
it. Oh, really?
Oh yeah. He's actually a natural. I got him.
You built it or you had one? Bought one?
No, I actually had a youth longbow built from his name's Joe Bennett, and he runs Mountaineer Longbows. He's actually right here in West Virginia. So he builds youth longbows. He's an awesome guy, and it's great quality. So I had my stepson built I had him one built for Christmas. I think it was, I can't remember if it was last Christmas or the one before that. I think it was the one before that. But, he's always, you know, asking me to shoot bows and stuff out back. So it's awesome.
Cool. How old is he, you said? He's eight or no?
Yeah. Yep. He's eight.
Oh, perfect. That's cool. So what was the desire to get into filming or at least create a channel just because, you know, something new to do? I mean, everyone else has one. I mean, or what?
Yeah, it was. So I've really been thinking about it for the past, probably 3 years, honestly. And I just never wanted to carry the extra stuff just because, you know, hunting in these mountains, you're hiking in so far, you're gaining all this elevation. It's really a chore just to get in there to hunt with what you have and adding all the extra gear didn't sound really appealing to me, nor did I want, you know, a camera to come across, you know, basically cost me an opportunity as well. But this year, you know, now that I'm pretty confident with my longbow now, and I'm really enjoying doing it. I got a few deer under my belt, so it's just like, I was like, I'll just try it this year. And I bought a cheap fluid head off Amazon. I'm just using my iPhone to film right now. And a friend of mine gave me a camera arm for free. He just was like, here, I'm not using it. You can use it. So that's what I've been using. And I've been really enjoying it, and I really regret not starting it, you know, when I started thinking about it like 3 years ago. So.
Yeah, the filming thing is tough. I mean, I just started carrying a GoPro this year. And that's all I'm really like, as far as like in the tree or like, or hunting or whatever, that's all I'm doing. I, you know, I thought about the phone thing, cause anything I do, any filming I do or videos I do for the channel, I just do it on my iPhone, right? With the tripod. Uh-huh. But I mean, I'm not hunting with it, cause A, I don't want to kill the battery. And B, like the GoPro, I used it, in Georgia. I went, you know, hog hunting down there, and I used it for the first time. I'm like, oh, the quality's pretty good. You know? Yeah. It's like a GoPro 7 too. It's not even anything like super, I'm sure, I don't know what they're up to, like 13, 14, whatever. It's kind of like, kind of goes like with the iPhone thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And it just sits on my head. It's not really intrusive. And it gets to good angles, and I can actually do like a little, like, you know, turn it around on me. And, you know, if I can do like an interview, you know, kind of thing, walking in or, you know, like, you know, in the tree or whatnot. And it comes out pretty good, you know. So I've done a few of those, haven't shot anything, of course. So it always ends up like that footage that, like, you record the footage that never gets used.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's October 3rd or so. It's the next day. Oh, here's what I'm going to do. Nothing happens. So you got all this B roll, you know. But I think I'm just going to stick with that, because you're right. I mean, I looked into like, man, if I buy like a cheap camera and then the arm and then this and that, I already carry like so much crap in with me that I'm like, I just can't. I can do the GoPro. I'm not going to do anything else. So I'm kind of happy with that. But I'm liking what you're putting out. That's you've only got a few videos out there right now. But the last one was pretty damn cool. And I want you to kind of talk about that hunt too, because this is the last deer that you shot just not too long ago. And is this on that 30 acre property you're talking about, or?
Yes. It's on that brand new permission that I have. And, it's located in Loudoun County, Virginia. And, for those that might listen that, you know, hunt in Virginia, they'll know that Loudoun County is very high deer density. And, you know, it's known to have some pretty good ones, you know, running around just cause it's all urban and stuff, you know? So,
right. But so before you get into that, I do want to geek out a little bit on your gear, right?
Yeah,
sure. You are mobile. So I guess we can just kind of talk about your equipment. I mean, you said you went back to the tree stand. You know, we could talk about that, what you're carrying, and then, you know, kind of just what you're shooting for a bow nowadays, bow, you know, arrow setup, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with my stand setup. So I kind of went through a few different ones after I ditched the saddle. The first stand I picked up was a Novix Hilo, and nothing but good to say about it, other than just a little heavier than a lot of the stuff on the market, right? So
yeah, that's what I got right now.
Yep. I would buy another one in a heartbeat. I've actually been thinking about getting another one just to have.
And I bought mine before they did a $100 price increase overnight. Cause exactly. I got mine for like $230, and then all of a sudden, like overnight, boom, they're like $339. I'm like, what in the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up getting mine secondhand off of, the buddy that I was hunting with when I got my first trad kill. I bought it off of him for $180. So
nice.
So I had that stand for a while, used it, loved it, ended up trying to go a little lighter. Got a 0.5 and, from Lone Wolf Custom Gear, hunted that for a good while, and then traded that off to a friend and got, what I'm using now is a lock-on Windwalker. And, it's one of the new production models. I'm actually glad that we're talking about this, cause I get asked all the time about where I got the Windwalker. A lot of people don't know that, Mark at Treehopper LLC bought the design, and he's making new production models now. So if you send Mark an email, I think they're shipping for $190 new, and they're like 6 pounds, I would guess. They're pretty light stands.
So I don't know much about the old ones, and I certainly don't know anything about the new ones. All I know is like, they're kind of talked about like, oh, that's like the original, like super lightweight, you know, whatever. But I, how was it on, well, hang on. So you had the 0.5. I want to talk about that first. What made you go away from that? Because I'm really looking at that, and then because it's, you know, again, a little bit lighter, you know, kind of thing, and things seem to maybe stack a little better on there. But what didn't you like about it?
It wasn't. I don't want to say I didn't like anything about like I love the stand. It was an amazing stand. It's just I have a problem with, you know, hunt with something for a season, and then I'm like, I want to try something different, you know, and like. So there, it was nothing against the stand whatsoever. Those 0.5s are the ticket. So I would totally buy one if I were you. But, I'm actually, before next season, I kind of want to buy a 0.75, just to have that tad extra room, you know?
Yeah.
But, cause that 0.75 is about the closest thing I can replicate to a Hilo, but it's definitely lighter than the Hilo by like a couple pounds, I think.
Yeah.
So, I don't really get into the pound thing too much, the whole weight stuff. I carry what I need, you know what I mean? And I just deal with it.
Yeah.
So I ended up just wanting that Windwalker. It's just like you said, you know, they were the original mobile tree stand. And, I still think the design's relevant. It's just, those things came out, I think, in the '80s, you know? And, the only thing it lacks is, leveling adjustment. So there's sometimes I'm kind of sitting backwards, you know, and like a, you know, slightly leaning tree, but it's nothing that's been like detrimental to any of my hunts. Like I can always find a tree to get into, it seems like. So,
so the platform doesn't like a level adjustment or?
No, it doesn't. It's all kind of one piece. It's basically the cables go from the frame of the post to the platform.
So, what about like side to side, like a bat wing or, you know, beast bracket, whatever you want to call it, like for the post.
Yeah, so it's pretty plain Jane. It's got basically the bolts that, like, it's hard to explain. It's in my truck right now. I actually wish I had it to look at, but it's like the bolts that go to the seat frame basically grip the tree, and then there's a V bracket that it's one piece of the platform. So like the platform comes back and then swoops into like a V bracket on the back, but it's just smooth. There's nothing in there. So what I did kind of a little modification. I drilled three holes on each portion of the V bracket, and I put nuts and lock bolts on it. So it's like I have screws biting into the tree now, and it made a night and day difference.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yep. So it made a night and day difference. So.
Yeah, I really like the adjustability of you know, this the Hilo.
Absolutely.
You know, which, because I you know, I like it level, and I like it like not leaning side to side, you know what I mean? And it seems like any tree I've been in, like this year, I've pretty much been on like the outer two, you know, points. No matter what tree I'm in, it seems like, because you got, you know, you want to be on the correct side of the correct tree too, you know. So I don't know, I like it. I've modified it enough that hacked the seat up quite a bit, because the seat on these things are like gigantic. So I like
they are
took a jigsaw and like cut out like half of the seat and like half of the left like butt cheek, you know. So I have some more limb clearance on, you know. So, but yeah, modifications are fun. But so you're doing the Windwalker. What are you climbing with?
So when I'm on private land a lot, I'll use bolts and a hand drill from Treehopper LLC. If I'm on private land. It's the same guy making those lock-ons now. And I keep them in a roll pouch on my, I use a Dryad Killdeer harness. So I got this little roll pouch that attaches to the right side, and it's got my little hand drill and bolts that stay there. But if I'm on public, I have two, Lone Wolf Custom Gear 17-inch, compacts. It's their single steps. And, I use cablators on both sticks. So I'm only carrying two sticks. I'm hunting like, most of the time, like 10 to 12 feet high is really all I get, because I'm terrified of heights.
Yeah, me too. Yep. I've switched to, I just reached, well, I was one stick climbing, right? But I wasn't going above like, I don't know, 12, 14, 15 at the highest kind of thing. But I just got in another beast stick over here. So I modified the first one to do with the cam cleat, you know, so I can like one stick climb. And the second one I've just got, you know, they're both stealth stripped and all that stuff. But the one has a cablator. It's like 15 inch. And the new one, I haven't gotten a cablator on it yet. I got this one of those like movable, like 4-step, 5-step, you know, kind of webbing eaters, you know, you get off of Amazon. Yep. And I'm okay doing that off on the, for the first stick.
Yeah.
You know, cause you do have a kick out on those things, you know, and then the longer you have with that, you know, the webbing is away from, like, you know, the bottom step, basically where I hang it off of, the more it's just like, you'd be amazed at how much you swing out sideways when you, and this was like 5 feet off the ground. I was like, whoa, you know, this is, you know, but I'm good with that. I'm good with the bottom one. I just, you know, but the cableators are the ticket for anything else. I've tried them all. I've tried, the webbing, I've tried the ropes, I've tried the amp steel. I like the cable. That's anything after the first stick, it's cable for me.
Yep, absolutely. They just stay nice and open. They stay rigid. Like that was always my complaint with aiders, is like, I felt like I was trying to get my toe in there and then pushing it off the tree just to get my foot seated and then having to bring it back to the tree. And you're like, doing all this with one foot on the stick, you know?
Yep. You got to finagle your toe in there and kind of you got to kick the whole thing away from the tree just so you can slide the rest of your foot in.
Exactly.
Yep. So how high are you getting, you said, then with those two sticks, with the
normally with the like 10 to 12 feet. It just depends on like the tree I'm climbing. It just depends on, like, you know, cover. And like, I never seem to have problems finding cover at those heights, even most of the season, really. I mean, if I really have to, I'll just put my stand on the backside of the tree and, you know, put the tree in between me and what I expect to come, kind of like a saddle in a way at that point. But, right. You know, I've never really had any problems doing that. Plus, I'm so scared of heights. You know, I can't do it anyways. Even if I had to go 18 feet, I wouldn't. So I would just figure it out.
Yeah, me too. It's kind of funny. Like, I'm okay to about like 15 or so. Now, I used to, like, until last year, I used to be like terrified. And then I learned to lock the thing better, and I got rid of any kind of wobbles and stuff. And then, but even still, it's amazing how, like, if you're at like 15 and then all of a sudden you decide to go up like to 16, all of a sudden your internal, like, altimeter or pucker factor or whatever, you're like, hey, we're just a little bit higher than normal. And it's amazing what that one extra foot or two extra feet will be like, all of a sudden, like, you know, we were okay, now we're not.
And when I used to hunt climbers way back in the day, like, I used to push that. I would go 17, 18 feet on some hunts, and then I would just sit there uncomfortable the whole time. I'm like, this isn't even worth it. Like, I'm out here to enjoy myself, so I'm gonna go as high as I'm comfortable and learn how to master that, you know what I mean? So
I don't know whether it's a psychological thing too, by the way, anybody listening, don't take my, I'm not saying do this, but I'm like, man, if I'm only like 10 or 12 feet up, I can probably jump off of this thing and be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're probably, I mean, you know, obviously don't do that, but there's a difference between like being like 16, 18 feet up, and then like, I'm only like 10, 12 feet up. It doesn't even seem like I'm that high off the ground. I'm just a little elevated. So it's like the fear of that is like no factor, right? No big deal. I'm good. So it allows you to kind of concentrate on what you're supposed to be doing instead of just, you know, hugging the tree, you know, the entire hunt, because you're afraid to, you know, step 3 inches away from it.
Yep. Absolutely. So, but yeah, I mean, so I got that. I got the Windwalker, the Lone Wolf Custom Gear sticks. On the Windwalker, I also have a Lone Wolf Custom Gear extended sidekick to hold my bow. I've been liking that a lot. So I actually have it to where it kicks off the front of my stand, so my bow's like kind of like sitting there in front of me, but I just grab it with my left hand. I'm like a, you know, because I'm a right hand draw. So I just grab it with my left hand right off that little hook, and it's good to go. So that's what I've been using with my stand and sticks.
And then what do you got for bow and arrow setup now?
So last year, I'm sorry, I think I ordered it in February and I got it in the spring. I shoot an Omega HP64 from a Kagan.
Yep.
And love that thing. It's 40 pounds at 25 inches, which is my draw. And like I said, I'm a small framed guy, so I really enjoy the low poundage bow. So I'm shooting that thing. I absolutely love it. It's a great shooting bow. I got a Selway slide on quiver on that bow. And for arrows, I'm shooting Easton Jazz 1916 aluminums. And I have those cut to 28 inches with the standard insert. And I'm shooting 190 grain Simmons Timber Sharks. And then,
nice.
Yeah, and then I got like a whole group of arrows. I got some with trad veins on them, and then some. I'm shooting some four-fletched banana cut feathers right now. Those are about 560 grains total. So really nice arrows.
Just yeah, perfect.
I don't think I've had an arrow set up fly any better out of any bow I've shot. These things are just lasers. And what really helped out with my gap shooting with these Simmons heads is I've oriented them vertical. This is another thing I learned from the push. I oriented them vertical, but slightly to the side just to account for my cant, you know, when I cant the bow. And I've actually been using that Simmons broadhead as a sight post. And I have my gaps figured out just off that blade, using it as a sight post. So it's helped a ton. So.
Yeah, I've tried that. I gotta have mine horizontal just for for my mental thing, you know. But that seems to work. And those I'm actually holding those. I've got a set of Easton Jazz right here, 1916s. I don't know what I'm gonna do with them. I got them trying out different stuff with the ASL. You know, I'm trying to go
nice.
Not shooting a 32 inch arrow. You know.
Yeah.
But they're flying so nice, the 32. You know, the gold tip traditionals.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to find like a softer spine. That actually has enough weight, you know, because you can go down to like gold tip warriors, right? But I mean, you end up with like a 380 grain arrow, and I'm like, well,
yeah.
that ain't cutting it, you know. I mean, I'm shooting 570 or something right now, but I don't know. I think I ordered the wrong. I probably should have ordered like 1816s instead of 1916s.
Yeah. What's crazy is since I started traditional in 2020, I've not shot any carbon at all or any wood. It's been aluminums the whole time.
No kidding.
It's something I bought. I think it was because I realized like how affordable they are and then how forgiving they were to tune. And I was like, these things are great. And then, you know, that first doe I killed back in that, you know, back in 2021 with my, you know, that zipper reeker, it zipped right through the deer and stuck in the dirt, you know, halfway into the dirt. And I pulled it out and, you know, washed it, took it in the backyard, made sure it flew good. It still flew fine, didn't bend or anything. I was like, these things are tougher than people give them credit for, you know? So.
See, I tried them like last year when there was the aluminum craze. Again, you know, thanks to the push. And I shot them for a while and I'm like, man, I just keep bending these things. And I don't know, maybe just was not, I just went back to carbons, you know? But then I wanted to try something, like I said, spine-wise that, for some reason, I don't know, I can't get like 600s to fly out of this ASL, even though I'm pulling like 45 pounds on it, you know. They hit, I don't know whether it's an arrow length thing versus just the spine thing, just the way where the arrow is when it's flexing as it's, you know, being accelerated. I don't know, I'm not sure, but I have one set of arrows that actually flies, and it's a gold tip traditional 500, right?
Okay.
But it's a full length 32. But I don't like 32 inch arrows. They're just too long, you know.
It seems pretty long. Everything.
Yeah, I like a 30 or 30 and a half at the most, but I can't get anything to fly, you know, weak enough or, you know, proper enough out of it.
Yeah.
So it's a constant, but I'm not going to mess with it till after season, because they're, you know, they're flying good. But did you say you were putting did you say you had an insert in that thing up front?
It was just a standard insert it comes with. I think it's like 12 grains or something like that. Just
the aluminum one.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, that sounds like a pretty sweet setup. That's about perfect. I mean, that 500 and, you know, 30 ish grain kind of zone is like, I don't know. I like when arrows land there, you know, as far as trajectory and sight picture and all that stuff, you know, it's just all kind of like a sweet spot, but, I guess it all depends on your bow. Like I've got a Java Man L card over here that it's like, again, I'm pulling 43, 44 at the most, probably 43. And I'm shooting a 663 grain arrow out of that thing. Not because, you know, I want crazy heavy, but it hits really high for me if I don't have like a stupid heavy arrow, you know, which is not a bad thing, a terminal, you know, results, but that's just kind of where it landed, you know, and I've just kind of given up on trying to be like, oh, I need to hit this exact weight range. Just wherever it lands, you know, it's more confidence that way.
Yeah. And like, I actually did, like when I shot compound, I did the heavy arrow thing, like, you know, intentionally. And then when I came into, you know, the whole traditional thing, I did it again, and I was pulling, you know, turns out I was pulling around that 39 to 40 pounds with that black hunter. Once I found out I was actually drawing 25 inches, not 20, you know, 27. And, yeah. I shot a buck with that last fall with that bow, and I was shooting a 704 grain arrow out of like a 40 pound bow.
I remember this. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. It was a 2016 aluminum, footed and all that with a single bevel. And the damage it did to that buck I shot was insane. I had never seen anything like that from a bow, but, it was just one of those things. I was like, you know, I got this Omega and I was like, that's cool, but those heavy arrows were actually like not passing through. I mean, I obviously contacted the elbow on that deer, probably wouldn't have passed through anyways, but
yeah.
I was like, let me try to like back off and see what I can gain or lose. You know, I was just experimenting, and that's when I come up with this, with these 1916s, and I saw the flight I was getting, and I was like, there's no way this can't be optimal for deer hunting. And, you know, cause they're just laser beams. Even like I could even mess up a little bit, and they're mm-hmm. lasers. So,
yeah, it's awesome having that.
It gave me a confidence huge, in it. Yeah, huge boost of confidence. So,
all right, so I want to talk about this last deer you shot. Yeah. Super cool. And by the way, people go watch Tony's channel. It's on there. It's pretty crazy, but I want you to walk through it.
Yeah, for sure. So, like you mentioned earlier, that's that new 30-acre property that I've got permission on. And, you know, very fortunate how I stumbled into that place. It's, I think that place is going to bless me with some good sized bucks in the future if I'm able to hunt there, you know, going forward. But, super high deer density out there. So I was hunting this was September 15th of this year. So, I went out that morning, and it's basically, you know, kind of to give people a lay of the land. It's a 30-acre farm. Most of it is like a hay field type thing. It's like grass that they cut down for hay and then stack bales off to the side. And then you have the adjacent property straight across has like, it's like 250 acres. And that person is like pretty anti-hunting. Like they don't. So it's basically a 250-acre sanctuary for deer. And you got this finger of woods that hugs, that basically comes into the farm I'm hunting. And that creek bottom is the property line, and that creek bottom runs north to south. So that finger's coming off that farm to the north going south. So I've been hunting just off to the west side of the creek, which is the side I can hunt. Right. And lots of trails going, you know, 10 yards inside the wood line. And they also were walking the field edge too. So I hiked in that morning, you know, not a very far walk, probably 200, 300 yard walk. And got in super early. I think I hung my stand at 5 a.m. that morning. It was early. Got in clean. Didn't hear any deer blowing at me or nothing. I didn't even see any eyes in the field or anything. Just felt good. Like I got in super quiet. No fumbling with anything. Everything went right, which rarely happens for me, by the way. So I was out there, you know, sun comes up right before daylight. I had a barred owl land like 10 yards in front of me and hoot. That's actually the opener to my video. I'm sure you saw that part.
Yep.
But, so as soon as daybreak starts, I start seeing deer. They're running the field edge to the east of me on the property I can't hunt. And I also saw a bunch coming off that farm to the north and going through the middle of the field, just, you know, way too far out for me to shoot. And, so I saw those, you know, it was probably 10 deer at that portion. So it was about 8 in the morning. A whole group of gobblers came out. Just beautiful morning. And right at about 8:15, I see a deer coming down the edge of the field. And she turned and hopped into the woods and took the trail that I was basically set up for. And I see the one hop into the woods, and then I see three more behind it. And I was like, wow, this is going to get western here in a minute, because they were coming directly at me. And so I stood up, got everything ready, you know, had plenty of time to get the camera ready, and they came in. I just let them come. I thought for sure they'd see me at any point. I was only 10 feet off the ground that morning, maybe 10, 12 foot. And what had happened
was... You didn't seem very high. I mean, you were like right on that edge too, right? It seemed like it anyway. You're like right on that wood line. Yep. And they look like they're literally just right underneath your stand.
Yeah, they and I didn't expect it because that trail kind of makes a Y. And you can see on my channel on the video for opening morning, I had a doe and a fawn come through and they actually took the trail that was further to the east. And that's what I set up for because it was the most like highly used one. It kind of wide right there that like right underneath me. You can kind of see it in the video. Yep. But they ended up taking the faint one, which put me in a predicament. And that lead doe ended up 5 steps from my tree. And I really don't like the shot I took. Like, I 100% admit that. And, you know, I've actually caught some flack for it. So, you know, wasn't the greatest shot to take. But as we just talked about, I was so confident in my setup. And I've been practicing so much. And I was like, I'm 10 feet off the ground. She's right here. I'm pretty sure if I hit her between the shoulder blades, my arrow is going to get into the diaphragm and do a bunch of damage. So when I let the arrow go, I hit exactly where I wanted to hit, like right between the shoulder blades. She made a gurgling noise, which right off the bat told me like I just hit her lungs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she reared up and kind of did that kind of like reverse mule kick in a way. Mm-hmm. I just knew it was fatal, but I had those doubts because it looked to be a lot of arrow sticking out, and you probably saw that in the video.
Yeah.
When in the grand scheme of things, it actually got about 12 inches of penetration. I think when she reared up, it pushed it right back out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so anyways, I hit her. She ran off. You know, like I said, I had like two little angels on my shoulder. Like one's like, yeah, she's a dead deer. And the other one's like, I don't know about that one, you know?
Yeah. I got doubts.
Yeah. I had doubts immediately. And, you know, I expressed that in the video, but, yeah, so I gave it some time, but I just knew. I was like, I'm not going to find any blood. That's a wound on the top of the back. The other deer actually didn't know what was happening and fed out. I could have shot another one. I had the second biggest doe of the group at 18 yards on the field edge, but I didn't feel right. I was like, I got to know what happened to this deer first. Because we don't have bag limits in this county. I can fill all my doe tags in a day if I wanted. So it was like, I could have shot that deer, but I didn't. I didn't feel right. So I climb down, pack up my stand, called my wife, texted a few buddies, actually reviewed the shot actually in the tree. Let me back up a little bit. Reviewed the shot. That just confirmed my confidence because I could see it better. Made a clip, sent it to a few buddies. You know, they're like, yeah, that's probably a dead deer. And so I eased down, packed up my stand. I left my stand on the field edge and I was like, let me just try to find my arrow. Cause I as soon as she left the frame in that video, I could hear my arrow hitting branches and all kinds of stuff. I was like, it probably flew out up here about, you know, 50 yards up the way. But I never found anything. And, I'm doing circles, grid searching, looking in the field. Maybe she hit the field and, you know, just died over the rise where I couldn't see. And then, there's two ponds on the property. So I was like, okay, let me ease up to this pond and see if maybe she's either laying there and I can get a follow-up shot or, you know, maybe she's dead by this water because, you know, deer go to water a lot when they're injured. And so I'm like going up this berm. It's like a little cattail, marshy looking area. And I go over this berm and I immediately see, this is like 30 yards to the pond now. And I see this bald eagle, like, he's not on the bank. He's in the middle of the water floating on something and he's clawing it, like clawing at it a bunch. And I ducked down. I was like, this is really cool. I want to get this bald eagle on film. You don't see them quite often. So I get my phone out, start recording. As soon as I stand up, he's actually looking my direction when I stand back up. So he saw me immediately and flew off. So I'm like trying to get decent footage of him, you know.
So how long is this, by the way, after the shot?
It was about 30 minutes or so, 30 to 40
okay.
minutes.
And an eagle's already on it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He was already on it. And you know, when I saw the deer bobbing on something, like I had no idea it was a deer. I thought it actually looked like a catfish to me, like the fin of a catfish, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like walking around the pond. Cause I was like, well, I'm going to go film what it is. Cause it looked like a large catfish. And that's when I kind of stopped and looked and I realized it was the belly of a deer. And that's I was crazy. Like, if that's my deer, like, you can't make this up. I was like, this is crazy. And the landowner had had two deer drown in that pond just over the summer. So I was like, are these deer just keep, you know, are they just drowning in this pond for whatever reason or what? But
I was going to say, why are deer drowning in this pond, first of all? I mean, what?
Yeah, I have no idea like what was going on. But I was like, maybe this is the third, but, you know. So I make my way over there, and it's, the deer doesn't look decomposed or anything. I was like, if this deer is not my deer, it drowned like this morning, like while I was sitting out here. So I fished it out with a stick, because the pond drops off quick. It gets deep. She was floating, completely floating, but she was only like 8 foot off the shore.
Yeah.
So I fished her out with a stick, and I spun her around because her belly was facing me. And I spun her around, and I saw that timber shark wound in her back. And I was like, that's my deer.
That's so crazy.
So I pulled her out of there, and you know, she was a good sized doe for Virginia. So yeah, I ended up getting her out of there, and she had expired fast, and I don't know what happened with the eagle situation. There's a lot of really tall pine trees on that property. Like, I'm talking like 50, 60 foot pine trees. I'm wondering if he was like sitting up in one of those, just observing the hayfield, looking for varmints or something, and she came crashing through and died in the pond. Maybe he saw it as opportunity. I don't know. But
that's so weird. That's yeah.
Yep. So
that's a hell of a story, man.
Yeah, and the way I thought she ran was completely wrong. I ended up finding my arrow 40 yards from the tailgate of my truck, like laying in the dirt, like completely intact. It just threw me off. I mean, that's also in the video. So
did she do like a big circle of some sort and then go crash in the pond or what?
Yeah, it was a giant horseshoe. Like, I thought she beamed it to the pond, but she actually cut right and went around the landowner's house completely and then made her way back to the pond. I have no idea why. Like, there was still no blood. I walked around everywhere looking for blood. I couldn't find any. So I just got lucky. Just happenstance. You know?
How did you fish her out of there with like a big stick or something? A big stick or what?
Yep, it was a giant like deadfall branch that I found, and I was like, I can get her with this. So
okay,
kind of fished her out of there with that, and then was able to get in like just, you know, barely over my boots, and you know, grab her by the foot. So
it was crazy. That is crazy. And I think the last time we talked or messaged back and forth, I think you said, because we had to, either you had to cancel, I had to cancel or whatever. I think you were about to cut up that deer. You're like, I really got to cut up this deer tonight. So I think you were like aging it or something, I'm sure. But or doing something. Yeah. So when you're getting stuff out, it sounds like these properties are relatively kind of close to be able to either drag it out. Or do you drag it out? Do you use a cart, sled, or do you debone? What do you do?
So this particular deer, I was able to drive my truck like right to her. So
that's awesome.
It was convenient. Yeah. Whenever I was sitting there in the video, I was like, you can see my truck across the pond, you know, like up on the hill. Mm-hmm. And it's just a little field. So I just drove around right to her. I got her all field dressed and taken care of. And then as I was taking my gear back to the truck, that's when I came across my arrow. And I was like, what are the odds that, I find the deer by happenstance. No idea what happened to my arrow. I really didn't care at that point. I did want it back because of the broadhead and stuff. But then I find it, and I was like, this is just, everything went right that morning. It was weird.
God, it's such a cool, I mean, yeah, if the guy's listening, just go watch this video. It's got a bit of everything, right? It's got you, it's got the excitement, it's got really good footage of these deer, and it's got the finale of finding this thing, and then just your reaction, you know, is like,
oh yeah,
just this disbelief, right? So it's like it's very cool.
Yeah, I actually called my dad was working. I call my grandfather. He's the first one I normally call after I shoot something or, you know, have some luck or have an encounter. Cause he's the one that got me into all this. Right. So I called him immediately. I'm like, Pap, I just shot a deer with my longbow again. And I was like, I don't know about the shot, but something is telling me that this deer just, you know, ran over there and died. I was like, everything about it looked good other than the choice to take that shot, you know?
Yeah.
So, but in the grand scheme of things, like I said, I end up finding my arrow. got 12 inches of penetration. When I field dressed her, the entire top of the diaphragm was shredded from her like running with that between her shoulder. And it was just kind of doing that cutting back and forth, and it, you know, without getting too graphic, but
yeah,
you know, it did a ton of damage. I clipped the vertebrae of her spine with the end of my blade. It punched right on through.
Oh, wow. So,
all that cartilage too. I was really impressed with my setup. So, cause you always see on, you know, all these pages, like, you know, will the Simmons get good penetration out of a low pound Jabot? And, if you do your part with the tuning, yeah, it will.
So, how are you sharpening those?
I do it about as simple as possible, and it's I just use a Rata sharpener, the little Rata thing, you know? And I somehow, a lot of guys tell me like that's bogus, you know, they can't do it that way or whatever, but 5 minutes on my Rata, it's popping hair off my arm, and I usually will just strop it on my blue jeans using the contour of my knee, you know what I mean?
Yep.
That's normally how I'll do it when I'm sharpening. I'll do like 30 hard strokes and then flip it, do that. And then I'll just get lighter as I go. And you can feel it. You can feel when the blade's smoothing out. And you just go lighter and lighter and lighter. And that's how I do it. And it works great.
I've tried that a couple times, and I've had those things twice. I bought one and then I was like, oh, this is stupid. I can't get it. You know, I threw it away. Then I bought another one. I'm like, I'm going to give it a shot. Cause they're only like what, $10 or whatever.
Yeah.
They're not that expensive. And then I threw that one away. Cause I don't like that. It does like a little convex grind on it, you know? Yeah. So you always have like this thin edge that, and then that thin edge, I can never get the burr to be like, gone, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or polished. I don't have like a paper wheel or anything like that. So, I mean, I've got some swamp sharks here that I'm not shooting on anything, but, I can get those like pretty, like my ace standards and Zwickies and stuff. I can get like, I mean, I can shave, right? I mean, like literally hair popping, with a file. I can do it with, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah.
The swamp sharks, I can get kind of hair popping, or shaving. I wouldn't say hair popping, but I don't know. In my mind, they're like, they're more than sharp enough if you get them to that point. I know we're not supposed to say that, right? We're supposed to be like, oh no, they're supposed to be able to like split atoms and stuff. But I don't know, man. Those they're pretty sharp, and as long as you get that burr off of there, I mean, I think they're gonna do the job. It's just I actually started doing it with a file, and I don't have a round file that's fine enough, and I just use like the edge of the Mill Bastard file, and you just gotta have, you know, just do like. Kind of do like steady strokes and just go with the curvature, you know what I mean? And as long as you're going with the curvature the entire time, it's kind of the same as having a round file. It's just trying to get that that burr off, you know, when you're all done. That's kind of been my I don't know, but they're pretty tough. I haven't shot it. Actually, no, that's nothing of stuff. I've shot squirrels with them.
Yeah.
they do a number on those. But no, I have them sitting here in my little tackle box full of stuff, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I really want to shoot something with them, but I don't know. I'm liking these A standards the way they fly. The Simmons fly great, by the way. The Simmons fly awesome. I've never had them not fly good.
Yep. I was very impressed. I was like using that thing as a sight post and shooting on there. I think there's a little short video on my channel of me shooting them at 25 yards from like, it's like a slow mo from behind me. And with the four fletch trad veins and the timber sharks, it's just a laser beam. And I was just like, yeah, I'm very happy with them. I also got, I keep a 200 grain VPA 3 blade as well in my quiver. That's the first head. That's the head I used to take my first, trad deer. So they kind of hold, it's weird. I always like having one with me just because it, you know.
Sentimental.
It's very sentimental. I can get them sharp super easy, and then they're just awesome heads. The three blades. But
I don't think there's a bad head out there. Not that I have a ton of experience like actually putting through them, you know, much game, but I mean, I don't think there's anything really like bad out there. It's these days, you know, I don't see a lot of junk.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. So.
And I don't know about you too. Like it seems like whatever I put on the tip, like if my arrow's tuned for that weight or anywhere like relatively even close to that weight, like plus or minus 25 grains, then it flies just fine, you know?
Yep.
And I think, you know, like I said, like, I mean, you gotta like tune as close as you can, but I mean, I can go up or down 25, you know, let's say like 175 versus like a 200, You know, that could be the difference between I got, you know, I got to anchor and I did that extra quarter inch of expansion or didn't do the extra quarter. Yep. You know, there's more, what do you call it? The margin of error in my ability to shoot than there is in 25 grains difference in something. But if it's too and close enough, they're going to fly. All mine fly just beautiful, you know, so.
Absolutely. Yep. For sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. Here's the thing too. I was gonna do a video about the importance of, you know, like a true spinning broadhead and not like a wobbly broadhead when you mount them, kind of thing, and difference in impacts and things like that. So I went to do the video, and I was using the Zwicky, and I had one perfectly spinning. And I can't remember what bow I was shooting out of, but. One perfectly spinning and one like I bent, like obviously bent, right? I'm going to put it down on like a wood block and kind of bent it a little bit. So it was kind of off. It was an obvious wobble. Like it wasn't sideways, but it was an obvious like wobble, right? So then I get to doing this video. And so I shoot my groups and then I start shooting the ones with the wobble and I'm like, son of a bitch, they're hitting the same spot.
Yeah, it's like you like couldn't get them to fly
and this back. Is like 15, 18 yards. And I'm like, okay, obviously I'm within that margin of error, right? That with a perfect mounted broadhead, I can get X group. And then with a wobbling broadhead, I can still get X group depending on the group that I shoot. And I'm not saying I obsess over having everything perfect and aligned perfect and, you know, like razor sharp, all that stuff. I'm not saying, you know, don't do that, but, it kind of backfired on me. I never put that video out because it just didn't work. Like, oh shit. <That's> These fly the same. Damn it.
Yep.
So yep, anyway,
That's kind of my rule too. If it's like within, like I said, I'm hunting with 190 grain timber sharks, but I carry that 200 grain because it flies. You know, it flies good. So
yeah, for sure. And you know, it's funny. This is from the Simmons thing. Like a lot of dudes, you know, they obsess over all this as they should, and they'll get like the swamp sharks, right? And they're listed as 175. If you've ever actually weighed a swamp shark, they go anywhere from like 170 something to like mine weigh like 185 or 188 or something like that. Wildly like different range. And I wanted to have him on the podcast. I got to call him up again. I can't remember the dude's name that owns Simmons now. I apologize, but, I called him up and we were talking and then he's like, look, I make these all by hand. You know, I try to get them pretty close. And he's like,
oh yeah,
honestly, he goes, all these guys, they come up and they talk about, is it within one or two grains? And he's like, 90% of these damn people are never going to know the difference within the extra 15, 20 grains, much less like, you know, 25, 30. And I'm like, dude, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
So most of these 175s here are like close to touching 190, you know, on here. And I think it's kind of funny if it's in your head, like, oh yeah, it's a 175, they fly perfect. And then if you tell someone like, have you actually measured it? Then you just kind of like crush their world, you know, like, oh,
exactly. Yep.
Then they'll go mess with it, tinker with it, you know, when they just leave it alone.
Yep. Yep. It's like, you won't tell the difference, man.
You won't tell the difference. No, you're the bigger, you know, what is it, like wrench in the works, basically. So
exactly.
Yeah. Anywho, all right, we're like an hour and a half into this. So anything else? Are you just hunting your West Virginia, Virginia this year? Any other like trips planned, or are you going to go after bear at all? I mean, do you do any of that or?
Yeah. So I'll be hunting Virginia and West Virginia this year. And I'm always bear hunting. I always have my tag in West Virginia. Now that I'm a West Virginia resident, I don't buy the Virginia bear tag because it's like $150 for me now. Mm-hmm. So I just buy my $10 West Virginia tag and I can actually shoot two bears on that one tag. So,
oh wow.
I just have the second bear. This has to be in like a select county that they have picked, like a lot of county type thing. So, so I'll just be hunting these two states, next year, next fall, I'm looking at hopefully trying Kansas. And then the fall after that, I should have five or six Iowa points I'd like to try to cash in. So,
dang.
I've been saving those.
Yeah.
So that's cool. My plan there. I'm just obsessed with deer. I don't have any other species to, you know, I want to go to, I just want to take my stick bow to the Midwest and experience it. So.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, deer, I'll hunt hogs anytime I can, you know, if I'm down south or whatever. I mean, it's just a kick in the pants. And then, like I said, I'm a huge, you know, small game, you know, with my bow. it's just so much fun. So that's pretty much my thing. I don't have a desire. I know this is sacrilege. I've said it before. Like, I don't really have a desire to go out west and hunt elk. You know, I'm sure it'll be fun, but I don't have this burning passion. And when people talk like mule deer, I'm like, great.
Same.
You know, it's just a whitetail that hops funny, you know?
Exactly. Yep.
I don't know. It's just personal, whatever. I guess I just need to shoot a whole lot more animals and then be like, okay, I can move on to something else. But, you know, I'm so low on the on the body count for some for these things, you know, like I'm just gonna concentrate on what's around me, you know. But
sure,
you're gonna keep filming, obviously, keep adding content this year.
Absolutely. I'm 100% hooked, so I'm hoping to upgrade some of my gear before next season. Like, I was looking at I'm gonna get a GoPro for like a second angle to put. I kind of want to put it on the tree above me, kind of looking down, you know, over my head. Yep. And then I have like a main camera. And then, it'll be, as long as I'm able to film it, it'll always be with me. So,
yeah, whatever you do, don't do those 360 cameras or whatever. No. They look so terrible. Yeah. They've got like a weird, like stop motion kind of thing going on. Uh-huh. And it's I don't know. I can't watch those. When people put those on there, I'm like, pass, like, you know, it looks weird. The angle looks weird. It's like fisheye plus a stop go, and it's like I'm good with the anything down to like a cell phone and a GoPro.
Yep, absolutely.
It's just, but as long as the content is good, you know, then everything else works out. And I think you're doing a really good job with it. So I was pretty excited when you started your channel. I'm like, sweet, more content.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
So. Yeah. So tell everybody where they can find follow you.
So I'm on Facebook as just as Tony Messina. I'm on Instagram as Team Messina Bow Hunting, and then obviously on YouTube as under Mountain State Trad Journal. That's my channel. So if y'all want to check that out, I plan on doing educational stuff as far as arrow building for people getting into it. I'm gonna start those videos, especially this off season, as much hunting content as I can put out. And then also wild game cooking, like another one of my passions. So
that's right. Yeah. You do have a cooking one out there too. Yeah. I like seeing that one. Yeah. Cool. All right. Yep. Stay with me on the line here while we wrap up. So everybody, thanks for listening. Go check out Tony's, all of Tony's content, good stuff. And, definitely looking forward to, seeing more out of you. So Tony, thanks for being on again. It's late. I appreciate it. So, everybody, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.